Support for the Commodity Week podcast comes from Strategic Farm Marketing in Champaign, offering crop insurance, grain marketing, and commodity brokerage services. Learn more at www.sfarmmarketing.com.
Commodity Week was recorded Friday, June the 25th, 2010. USDA is set to release the quarterly grain stocks and acreage reports next Wednesday. Will they change the commodity landscape? We'll ask our panelists and guests about their thoughts today on Commodity Week.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Welcome to Commodity Week. I am Todd Gleason. Later in this half hour, we'll talk with Dan Bossy from Ag Resource Company in Chicago, Illinois. Our panelists in studio today include Kurt Kimmel of Bates Commodities out of Normal, Illinois, Bill Mayer of Strategic Farm Marketing from Champaign, Illinois, and Bill Gentry of Risk Management Commodities in Lafayette, Indiana.
Support for Commodity Week comes from AgriGold Hybrids, featuring the AgriGold Giants, a group of five new hybrids designed to meet the performance standards of yield, health, and consistency required by Midwestern corn growers. More information is at AgriGoldGiants.com or at 800-262-7333. And by ADM. ADM thanks America's farmers because everything they do starts with you.
Well, let's start our discussion today, Bill Gentry, with this question. USDA, next Wednesday morning, we'll take another stab at the acreage. This time around, rather than getting the numbers only from farmers, they'll make some kind of true estimates. What do you think they'll show?
Well, we think they'll probably take a little bit of a lead like the Stats Canada numbers that were taken before most of the weather problems hit and really lean a little bit heavier on the survey numbers. We've been expecting the both corn and bean numbers to drift a little bit higher. The planting weather for the corn was really optimal early, and then now that we've got beans that aren't planted or need to be replanted, those numbers are going to shift back and forth. But the assessment is that the corn acres are probably going to be about a half a million higher and beans probably about the same. The question is, if you've got 5 million acres or 4.5 million acres that weren't planted last Monday, how much of that can you really dial down? And I think that's too big of a number for them to make a big assessment on.
Bill Gentry is with Risk Management Commodities in Lafayette, Indiana. Bill Mayer is with Strategic Farm Marketing right here in Champaign. USDA said the prospective plantings was at 88.8 for corn, 78.1 for beans. Bill says maybe a little higher. What do you think?
Well, I guess on the corn acres, I would probably go about a million acres higher. I think they could come in that 89.5 to 90 area. As far as the beans go, I think that's a tough one. I'd agree with what Bill said there, that it's going to be kind of like that Stats Canada report, because I think we'll see a little bit of an increase in bean acres possibly on the report, but I think the trade will be pretty quick to maybe write that off as old data.
And Kurt Kimmel of Bates Commodities.
Well, really, we need two guesses, what's going to be said next week and what the real answer is because of the weather.
You've got the real answer?
Oh, yeah, 88.5 on corn, 78.5 on beans. That's our best guess right now. It's going to be interesting to see what the commentary is after the report comes out and what they're going to do about resurveying and so forth. But what's going to happen is they'll probably adjust it to harvested acres as we move down the road. Then, two, we all know what affects the bottom line more than anything, though, is the yield they put on this crop as we go through the growing season.
Okay, a couple of things to remind you of as we go along the way. Next Wednesday morning, if you'd like to get the numbers directly from us, you can do that. Go to our website at willag.org. They will be posted on the website. Scroll down to the center of the page, and you'll see the USDA link. Those numbers are there already, and then we'll fill in the blanks Wednesday morning. They'll be posted. Dave Dickey will probably have them up by 7:40 or thereabouts. They come out 7:30 Central Time. Also on willag.org, if you sign up for our newsletter and you put in your cell phone, if you're already signed up for the newsletter, you can go back and manage your subscription over on the right-hand side of the page or sign up now, put your cell phone in, and we will text those numbers to you Wednesday morning, not long after they're out. Dave Dickey does that too. A good, fast, easy way to get the numbers for both the quarterly grain stocks and the acreage report next Wednesday. And while you're there, why don't you look up at the top of the page? There's a great big button that says, please do give us a little money. And we're in the middle of our fund drive, and that is the very last day of our fiscal year, and we sure do need your help. So if you get the opportunity, you can do that at willag.org. If you do, make sure you click the button that says ag, and we do appreciate it. If you'd prefer to make a phone call and talk to somebody, you can do that as well at 217-244-9455. Back to the task at hand, the numbers like this in Chicago on the week. July corn had a high of $3.67 and a quarter, a low at $3.39 and a half, and a settlement price at $3.40 and a half cents, down 20 and a quarter from last week. December futures, 395 and a quarter, down 16 and a three quarters of a cent. Did they just drag that much old crop corn out of the bin on that last run?
Oh boy, I tell you what, we Monday morning from Friday's close was, man, what a 180. It basically ideas better weather improvement and may slow down demand, and everybody ran for cover. A lot of speculative selling. Corn's at a critical point. We need to hold pretty close to Friday's lows to keep this market in a position to try to bounce.
Did corn move?
Yes, we had quite a few guys calling in and wanting to know if it's time to finish it up. And, you know, we had a bounce, and then it started to run out of gas. So, yep, it's time to reward that bounce, and we saw quite a bit move.
And were you telling folks to go ahead and finish off their old crop corn sales if they hadn't to?
Yeah, we made some sales when we had that bounce here. But I think really I think there was definitely some cash movement. But I think this whole economic picture and some uncertainty and this regulatory environment that we're in, I think all that's kind of weighing on the market. And really, if you look at the fundamentals over the past 2 weeks, I would say that things have probably worsened instead of gotten better as far as crops go. So I think we're seeing some outside influences come into this market again.
Tell me more about those outside influences and what they are and how they're impacting the marketplace.
Well, I think, for instance, today with the finance bill that passed, I think there's some feeling out there. We've got more regulations. That probably means that we're going to see less lending. If we see less lending, we're going to not get as much money into the economy as we probably should be getting into the economy, and it's going to slow the recovery. The recovery is going to be slower than what we thought it was. So I think that's kind of the thought process.
How long do you think that'll stay into the marketplace? I mean, this is something that will be around for a while.
I think it just depends on how we develop as we move forward, and the European situation continues to struggle and all that. And that's going to affect our grain markets, in my feeling. Anyhow.
Yeah, and if you look at the commitment of traders reports over the last several weeks, you've seen the hedge funds basically exiting position. Open interest has been going down. That's pretty indicative of the delevering that we're seeing and a lack of, I guess, risk appetite.
We know historically that this is what happens when you put regulation in place. We've watched it happen many times before, I think, in the marketplace. Crude oil, for instance, just not long after World War II, they put regulations on to try to control that one, and it took a very, very long time to come back out of that. There's some historical information up on the FarmDoc website at farmdoc.illinois.edu if you want to look that one up. Okay, so we've got guys still have old crop corn in the bin, too?
There's still a little bit out there. We've wanted them to move it, but we still get a call that says, oh, by the way, what should I do?
Are they scared now?
Yeah, a lot of calls this past week over the last month on what to do with old crop corn. Guys still hanging on, praying here for a little bit. So basically, like was mentioned, up moves in here need to be pushing it out the door.
Yeah, so what are you going to say? What are you going to call an up move now?
Well, right now, any 5 to 10 cent up or plus 2, give them the phone, call around. There's some special bids around if you search around from location to location.
Okay, wheat futures, July contract to 470 high, low at 455 and a quarter, off 5.5 cents in the harvest month at 456 and a quarter. July of 2011 at $5.56, they were down 13 and three quarters of a cent. Have you had anybody call in and talk about wheat yields and disease and problems that they might have in the field?
Yeah, we do a regular conference call every couple of weeks, and down in some of the southern areas, Kentucky, Tennessee, even southwestern Illinois, we've seen quite a bit of wheat harvested, really. It's pretty varied. I mean, you get in that Kentucky, Tennessee area, the wheat yields sound like we're pretty good, better than average. You get down in some of the southwestern part of the state of Illinois, at least, and they're kind of disappointed in their yields.
Go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say, as far as yields right now, we've heard some of the stuff's a little bit better down south. But my guys up in the northwest, like out in Montana, are saying they got a real good start, but they're nitrogen deficient, and they're probably going to put in additional nitrogen in order to boost their protein potential.
Yeah, a couple. Let's go back to the nitrogen deficient in the corn crop just a bit, because this is a crop that's suffering out there, I suppose, in some respects. Have you heard much from producers about rough spots in their fields, ideas of how much they think might be coming off of the crop at this point?
Well, as far as coming off the crop, our assessment right now is that a lot of areas that may look a little dismal may not necessarily be hurt in the end so bad. But as far as taking tissue samples and some soil samples, we've seen some areas that are really drowned out that basically have no nitrogen left. And there's several considerations of going in and doing supplemental treatment.
Yeah, basically your lower areas are pretty well gone, and it's just a matter of how the weather straightens out here in the next week or two.
And then offhand, Emerson Nafziger wrote in this week's IPM Bulletin, you can see that online at ipm.illinois.edu, 190 to 100 pounds of N if the crop is pretty tall. If it's not really standing in water and looks pretty bad. If it's in water and looks bad, just forget it. It's a done deal at that point. At least he thinks that's probably the case. So we'll see how that one turns out as well. July soybeans, 972 the high, the low at 955. Settlement price down 4 cents on the week. And November beans, remember, these are high, low, and settlements in composite trade, open outcry, and the electronic day and night, $9.12 for the November beans. They were down 18.5 cents. What do you think about the soybean acreage?
Well, it's... I thought we were going to see an additional 1 to 2 million acres above what we were looking at last winter, but with the weather the way it is now, I think we'll probably – I'm going to back off on that. We feel that the 78.5 area is probably going to catch the bean acres.
We didn't talk about the Corn Elite Grain Stocks report for the corn, but we'll get back to it. But how on the beans – we have an average guess now of 594 on the quarterly grain stocks report. What does that mean to you?
At this particular point in time, it's really the second half of demand, or the second half of the year exports are probably going to pick up. So even though we might be a little heavy in the middle, we've got kind of a backlog in our export commitments, so we'll probably see that number pick up. And so even if it is a little heavy, we've got a chance to fix it in the second half.
Well, I think that we see the basis levels and the spreads out here have kind of shown us that we have some pretty tight supply here, at least available supply. And what I think we've been seeing the market do, at least on the old crop here, is we'll run that market up some, we'll tighten the basis up, we'll get the beans bought out of the farmer's hands, and then we kind of come back down. It seemed like we've done that several times recently. You know, to move forward, if we can continue to do that, that's really the question. I think we could see some tightness as we move through the summer in this old crop beans still.
Old crop beans, and they're around a few farmers. If you're a producer, you're going to hang on to old crop beans and wait it out and see what happens?
I guess from my standpoint, we've had several opportunities to get $10 or thereabouts on the cash market, and I just can't see holding in that area. Now, where we're at here tonight, maybe you wait and see what the next couple of weeks bring.
Oh, if you want to speculate, I think you hang on for a little while, but time's running out. The spot bid, I mean, you're looking at 40, 50 over, and once they get them bought, you're back down to 20 over. You got to remember here, not too long from now, we're going to have beans in the south coming to the river.
Well, our discussion in the office today was simply we marketed a lot of beans early in the year, and now with all the problems that we're seeing, especially in the eastern and southern corn belt and bean belt, they're going to be tight holders. If they're only sitting on a truckload or two, they're probably just going to sit on them and see what happens. And as far as new crop, we made some commitments early when the prices were higher at 10, 10.5. Now just going to sit back and wait and see what happens.
I think one thing that's interesting on that, too, and I certainly agree with what these guys said, but if you look at that Brazilian basis, the Brazilian basis is really strong. Maybe just a typical run-up in basis after harvest like we see here, but it's something to keep an eye on, I think, as well.
So you're thinking that Brazilian farmers might let go, and that could push
Yeah, and I think the basis seems pretty high for the amount of beans that the Brazilian farmers supposedly still have left.
One last question. We need to take up the quarterly grain stocks report for corn. 4.598 billion bushels, the average trade guess. What do you think?
I think we'll be a little higher than that. For all the phone calls we're getting, we feel there's a lot more out there than that.
I guess I'm just kind of confused on these corn stocks and have been all year. If we see some, find that there isn't as much corn in the bins or something, we may get a surprise there, but I don't expect that.
I guess I think those numbers are pretty much in line and don't have any expectations significantly one way or the other.
You're listening to Commodity Week. It was recorded on Friday, June the 25th. If you can, please do dial this number right now. It's 217-244-9455. Or visit our website at willag.org and hit the big red button and pledge your financial support to Commodity Week and the agricultural programming for Illinois Public Media. When we resume our program, we'll talk with Dan Bossy of Ag Resource Company out of Chicago, Illinois.
I'm Steve Hilberg with the NOAA Midwestern Regional Climate Center, located at the Illinois State Water Survey in Champaign. It was more of the same this past week, very warm, humid, with several good thrashings by thunderstorms across the state. Temperatures this week averaged 4 degrees above normal in the north to 7 degrees above normal in the south. High temperatures south of I-70 were in the low to mid-90s most of this week, while temperatures remained mostly in the 80s to around 90 in the northern and central portions of the state. The biggest contribution to the high temperature departures was very warm overnight lows. The very humid air with dew points in the mid and upper 70s in many locations prevented low temperatures on most days from reaching below the low 70s, which is about 10 to 12 degrees above normal. For the second week in a row, much of Illinois endured consecutive days of thunderstorms, some severe, and which brought heavy rain. Many fields in central Illinois in particular are showing ponding, and it will take an extended period of dry weather to do away with the water. Precipitation in much of northern and central Illinois is already 2 to almost 3 times the normal for the entire month of June. It looks like we will finally catch a break from the heat, humidity, and rainfall after this weekend. A fairly strong cold front should push south through Illinois on Sunday and Sunday night. It will likely be accompanied by more thunderstorms, but it will also usher in much cooler and drier air into Illinois. By Wednesday, we could look for highs only in the 70s north to the low to mid 80s in the far south and with much lower humidity. For the NOAA Midwestern Regional Climate Center in Champaign, I'm Steve Hilberg.
Support for Commodity Week comes from AgriGold Hybrids, featuring the AgriGold Giants, a group of 5 new hybrids designed to meet the performance standards of yield, health, and consistency required by Midwestern corn growers. More information is at AgriGoldGiants.com or at 800-262-7333. And by ADM. ADM thanks America's farmers because everything they do starts with you.
This edition of Commodity Week was recorded on the 25th day of June, 2010. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Our panelists in studio today include Bill Gentry of Risk Management Commodities out of Lafayette, Indiana, Bill Mayer of Strategic Farm Marketing out of Champaign, Illinois, and Kurt Kimmel of Bates Commodities out of Normal, Illinois. Our guest on the phone line, Dan Bossy. He's with Ag Resource Company out of Chicago, Illinois. Let's go through some numbers that we didn't get to in the first half of the program, and we'll take up the quarterly grain stocks, the quarterly hogs and pigs report along the way as well. Live cattle futures, a June contract, a high this week of $91, a low at $89.87.5, settlement price at $90.95, up $1.65. August feeders at $113.20 were $3.02.5 higher from last week. July lean hogs, $82.50, the high, the low at $79.80 settlement price, at $80.70. 2.5, they were down 15 cents. Dan Bossy on the line with us. Mr. Bossy, thank you so much for being with us today.
You're very welcome, Mr. Gleason.
Did you get a chance to take a look at that Hogs and Pigs report, and what did you think of it? 90, I think everything was pretty much in line with what the trade was looking at.
Yeah, I think at face value, it's a little positive to the back end of the market. Intentions, farrowing intentions only down 1% after they've only been down 2 to 3 in prior reports. But, you know, it tells us that hog profitability will probably hang in here for at least another 3 quarters. So it's an encouraging report for the hog industry.
As far as the hog industries go, on the feed side of the equation, what do you recommend hog producers to be looking at on market and feed?
I think they need to be going hand in mouth. We advise some out-of-the-money calls as we got into this late spring time frame, just in case there was a weather problem. But at this point, you know, with the excess of moisture we have across the Midwest, Nebraska having its wettest June on record, it looks to us anyway that it's hard to rally markets with wet weather. There always seems to be more ridges in lowland, and in that case, I think the hog market or the hog producer probably needs to stay open. We're still fairly negative on the grain markets in general, maybe more so on corn than wheat at the moment.
Dan, what would you say the attitude in Chicago with your contacts there, just as far as crop conditions, are they kind of in that same boat that we still have an awfully big crop out here and things are continuing to get better, or?
Yeah, we're looking for conditions to actually decline another 1 or 2% on Monday. Though in a general sense, I think a lot of us are still kind of stung by what happened last year in corn and wondering if we've got the GMO yield kicker. I know in our modeling, we keep coming up with the U.S. corn yield in the vicinity of 167 bushels per acre. And if you could give me some favorable weather in the first 2 or 3 weeks of July, I think I could argue a number north of 170. Now, that seems high, if you will, but again, it's based to some degree what happened last year with that yield of 164.7. Most people here are taking the show-me attitude. In other words, tell me in September, October, the crop's not there. Until then, we'll kind of go with what happened last January.
Mixing the corn crop size up in quarterly grain stocks next week, what are you guys thinking about as far as feed consumption? I've heard some estimates that maybe we've overestimated feed by 200 million or so. What are you guys dialing in?
Yeah, we're dialing in a feed residual for the quarter of about 945 million bushels. I think anybody that looks at the feeding of distillers dried grains, you've got to back off your corn number to some degree based on fairly aggressive production of that other supplement. And so we're looking for corn stocks to be somewhere around 450 to 500 million bushels bigger than a year ago, let's say 4720 to 4750. And with that in mind, I kind of see it difficult for the stocks report to offer any bullish luster to corn. And if we don't see anything in the seeding side of it, you know, losing some acreage, we're not looking for a big increase, maybe 400,000 to 800,000 acres. But it all comes back to yield. You know, losing a half or gaining a half bushel of yield is far more important. So whatever the report says, I think our next turn skyward, and we start looking at weather 10 or 30 minutes after the report, and we kind of go from there.
Have you thought much about what E15, E12 might do to the marketplace? And have you done any modeling with E15 with, say, 2007 and newer cars?
Todd, you know, we all saw that announcement, I think it was now 10 days ago, on the 2007 and newer, and it was a disappointment. Because we were all utilizing our modeling at 2001 and sooner. If it's 2001, 2007 and sooner, I mean, we think that the impact on the corn market is something less than 300 million bushels going forward. And so, again, if you're going to have those kind of newer models or even 2001 and sooner, there's going to have to be labeling and segregation of pumps. And so that's why I think ADM asked for mandatory of 11 or 12%, something EPA doesn't have jurisdiction to offer. That would take something out of congressional legislation. And so, you know, to me, even though the E15 is out there and now going to be delayed probably until October, I'm afraid the corn producer is going to be somewhat disappointed in labeling and pump segregation. That all takes time, and it's not something that is going to be an immediate bullish impact on the market. I would also offer that the biodiesel credit, you know, the blender's credit we've been trying to get approved since December 31st of this year, got vetoed last night. Reed is saying he won't bring it up again this year, so I'm playing with numbers trying to decide what is U.S. storage capacity on soybean oil and what do we do with what we have excess. And so, you know, the bloom is surely off the biofuel side in terms of being a market driver going forward.
Hey, Dan, on this ethanol, could you go through your timetable again, like when you expect maybe some final approval or direction and how soon in the marketplace?
Well, let's say they approve it in October. We think then there would be at least 3 to 6 months before it would be put into application. And then, of course, if we are right on this, the segregation of pumps and labeling, service stations may have another year to do that and set it up. And so, you know, we're kind of pushing any demand impact, if you will, well out until sometime late 2011 or 2012. And, yeah, that's too long for the market to focus on. And so we just don't think it'll have a lasting impact. And again, if indeed we want to mandate a use of ethanol, we think that has to come from Congress, not from EPA.
You don't think EPA has the authority to do E12?
Not from what we're being told.
I'm thinking about that and whether that's – why do you think it's not the case?
Well, they asked for whether E12 is a blendable rate, and again, they have not been studying E12 up until this point, Todd. They've been studying E15, and for so the industry to go back and ask for E12 is something that they could approve E12 in terms of being a blend use, but again, they can't mandate that we all use that within our gasoline blends. And so I'm already being told that stickers are being printed to be put on pumps for different levels of ethanol blends. That's not something the corn industry wanted to see.
Yeah, you don't think they're not taking the extra 3 months to do the final prep for an E12?
Not from what I'm hearing, no.
Oh, wow.
Because we've been thinking about it in-house and thought that it'd be very simple for them to just do the E12 and then let the legacy vehicles basically run their course. And if we get some unintended consequences, hopefully with 12%, it'd be minimal. And then down the road, maybe bump it up to 15 once your vehicle age and rollover takes place.
Well, there's been a lot of things. If you've watched the small engine traffic, Cessna came out with something just last week saying any blend over E10 will be harmful to the engines. And if it's used, there should be a legal case against them. Again, I think if they were to mandate it, it opens them up tremendously to legal challenges, and that's something I don't think EPA or the U.S. government really wants.
Let's look on the production side of it. Aren't plants right now running pretty much at capacity, and how long would it take the industry to gear up to meet that extra demand if we do get it?
Well, if we were to get it, it wouldn't. I mean, the plant capacity is coming online. We've got, you know, more, at least another 5 plants coming online by the end of summer. I'm more concerned at the moment about hitting a blender's wall and increasing ethanol exports than trying to increase domestic consumption. So if we were to go to E11 or E12, as what ADM is desiring, we could be there very quickly by early 2011. I mean, we wouldn't have to ramp up at all. And so the message here in my work is that the U.S. ethanol industry is reaching a mature stage, and that trendline yields will all of a sudden start to equal what the build-out is in the U.S. ethanol industry, which means we've got to have another demand kicker if we're going to take grain prices to sharply higher levels.
Got an idea what that might be?
I don't at the moment, Todd.
Any other final thought before I let you go?
Really not. I'm concerned by biodiesel and the lack of political will in Washington in terms of what we call maybe some austerity measures. The big topic in our office going forward is really, do we have GMO yield kickers, and can corn and soybean yields score new records this year, which I think starts to pressure the price skews going in forward years.
Time will tell. Thanks much, Dan.
You're welcome.
Dan Bossi is with Ag Resource Company out of Chicago, Illinois. A final word now from our panelist in studio. We'll start with Kurt Kimmel of Bates Commodities.
When we look at the big picture, we feel there's been a lot of crop damage by too much moisture. When it's all said and done, we go into long-term mode next fall, there's going to be less harvested acres.
Bill Mayer, Strategic Farm Marketing.
I think that it's time on the corn to defend your position if you haven't done that already. I think going into this report, there's some short-term put options out here that'll give you some protection in case we do get surprised on the bearish side, but leave you open in case we eventually realize that some of the things Kurt just said.
And Bill Gentry of Risk Management Commodities.
Yeah, like Dan was talking about, having that yield kicker to the upside, we think that the western guys and the northern guys very well could enjoy that. But in our neighborhood, we've definitely whacked the top part off this crop.
That's this edition of Commodity Week. Our thanks to the panelists in studio and to Dan Bossi. Please join us if you can at willag.org. I'm Todd Gleason.